Hello, I'm Rabbi Iggy, and welcome to Tattoos and Torah.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tattoos and Torah. I have a special guest today, which I'm very excited about the conversation. Joining me today is Marla Aaron. Marla Aaron is a jewelry designer in New York that pushes the boundaries of design. Marla has proven to be one of the most innovative designers whose emotional hardware has locks at its core. The collection is proudly made and finished by hand in New York City and is sold all over the world. What began with one lock is now an entire collection designed to be worn in infinite ways and used as jewel tools with individuals' own collection to redefine the precious and preciousness, I guess, in jewelry with individuality. Although recognized for its streamlined industrial look, the collection is deeply rooted in the personal and emotional jewelry of the Victorian and Georgian era and has expanded to incorporate many, many other elements. Welcome, Marla Aaron.
Rabbi Iggy, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, honor.
Oh, the honor is mine. The first question that sort of begs to mind, I think, for people, and so like, you know, is like, what is a jewelry designer doing on a, right, on a spiritual and recovery podcast? And, right?
I don't know, because I'm going to be totally point blank here. I'm not in recovery. And I'm not specifically spiritual in the way you would think, but...
But I've convinced you to come on.
You have convinced me. I said no, and you've convinced me because I really like you. That's the truth.
You know, so it's funny. I think that's the first answer. I mean, I think that sort of that what people, a lot of people do not always recognize. And I think this is true in business as in other things, but then I'll answer why I actually am excited about this conversation. Is that people do things for people. You hire people, not positions. You do things for people that you love and care for, right? And at the end of the day, right, in recovery, we often say that the opposite of addiction is connection. Mm-hmm. And part of the work that I always try to do is build communities. And in that sense, right, you do things for people.
That's right. You do things for people. And people is the hardest part of pretty much everything and the most amazing part of everything. That's really, at the end of the day, all that matters is the people. Even though I'm in the business of selling objects, it's all about the people. That's really it.
Right. Because you're in the business of selling objects to people.
Right? That's right.
And those objects become conversations for people.
That's right. Objects that they don't need, that are very expensive, which is something that humbles me daily.
So I'll answer the question why I wanted and why in this conversation, because it has a few different layers. One layer is, and I think it's overlooked in Jewish life, I think it's overlooked in spiritual life, that is that sort of we tend to bifurcate the world into these shallow and deep sort of pools. That is, right, our spirituality is deep and connection is deep and love is deep and meaning is deep. But of course, fashion and jewelry, that's shallow, right? And I'm really have always kind of fought against that. And in that sense, still do, because one, I don't like binary things. But more importantly, how you present yourself, the way that you adorn yourself, the way that you express yourself, the way that you choose to control the narrative of how you are in the world is incredibly deep. It is not shallow at all.
Agreed. And I've always cared a great deal about those things. And I don't think they're shallow. I think some of the most sophisticated and intelligent people I've met in the world happen to be very well-dressed.
Right.
They care. They care enormously because they care in a multi-layered kind of way about their life.
That's right.
It's the old adage, which my son, if he were sitting here, would roll his eyes, which I've said to him always, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I feel that very deeply. Maybe that is my spirituality. How you do anything is how you do everything. In my work, in my home life, you know, people, including my husband, if I say I'm just going to have a midweek dinner at home, my husband's like, well, that's not going to be like a casserole that you throw out of the oven. And it's like, no, it's not. and the linens are going to come out. And if he and I are having dinner, the linens are out. Like, that's just the way it is in life.
No, I think that's deeply spiritual. And in that sense, I think, right, for anybody who knows me and knows the podcast in general, knows that I think that part of our goal in this life is, right, to create meaning out of the experiences that we have. That is really what spirituality is. And I think we would be remiss if we spend time about developing our inner world, our brain, our emotional world, and then somehow decide to toss it when it comes to the first thing that people notice about us, which is how we look.
That's right.
You know, when you walk in a room, right, you can come prepared, you can, right, defend your dissertation or apply for a job or even go on a date, whatever it is. But if you decide to neglect the first thing that people notice, then you're leaving money on the table. I mean, instead of like, right, and I think that is a deeply spiritual thing, because they think that so many of us do not feel we're worthy to be beautiful, or do not feel worthy to be adorned, or do not feel worthy to care about how we quote unquote look.
It's the smallest thing that you can do for yourself. And it's not even about money or anything. And sometimes it's just about ironing a t-shirt. And I learned that from my grandmother, who is the ultimate clothes force. So I had two grandmothers. One owned a dress shop and one was just an absolute clothes force. And the one that was the clothes horse, you would think, I mean, she had very beautiful and good things in her closet, but she also had Gap t-shirts that, when she died at 96, I actually had to go pick up some things from her tailor. And when I went to the tailor to pick up the things, there were three Gap t-shirts. She was 96. She had had them tailored. And the owner of the tailor shop said, "Your grandmother brought me everything to be tailored because it had to be perfect." So she loved these Gap t-shirts, but she would have them tailored to just above her arm and like at the exact place where it would fit her perfectly. So she was absolutely clothes horsing it in the assisted living facility until the day she died. Like, I had to go pick up these Gap t-shirts. And it was just so, it's a lesson right there.
I love that. And I guess, right, guess who gets his t-shirt made to his measure? That would be me, right?
Oh my God, is it you?
Yeah. I mean, look, one, I'm 5'6" and a half. So everything I've ever bought, right, needs to be tailored, whatever, like, I've never bought a pair of pants that doesn't need to be shortened, right? I should get a 15% discount because that's about as much as the pants need to be shortened. But I have everything because it's funny. I don't buy fast fashion, right? So I'll buy like those t-shirts are made for me and that's what I will wear. I don't go shopping in that sense.
Right.
If that makes sense, right? So
yeah, nothing is fast fashion for me. Everything, I keep everything. I hoard everything.
Right, exactly.
Nothing is really going to get thrown out ever.
Right.
I feel bad for my kids, but that's just the way it is.
So how did you get, so here, right, these jewels, and for people who want to see, because we have clips, right, here's one of the locks, which I love, on a chain, and then this is a strand of pearls of my grandmother's, the sort of that the Marla Aaron has very graciously created, restrung and created on a baby lock here for me, so I love these pieces so much. How did you get started making jewelry?
So I've been making jewelry for a really long time. I had a completely different career. I had the idea for doing this probably in 2003, 2004. I was in no position to leave a job, start a company. I was a single mom. I had a three-year-old. But I would do this at night. I mean, I would make jewelry, all kinds of jewelry. I would make at night. I would spend my lunch hours on 47th Street trying to get jewelers to make my locks. I met my husband sometime in 2005. I maybe whispered the idea to him. He knew I made the locks. Like, he knew it was this weird thing that was going on sideways in my life. And finally, I realized it. To me, it was just so clear, right? Like, locks and chains, claspless chains worn together. It's going to be amazing. Silver and gold. Like, I had the whole idea. The fact that we're still selling that exact collection with the same briskness that we did 12 years ago when I started the company, it speaks volumes about the idea itself, right? Like, it was just it came to me. It's okay. Like, I had that. So that's what we did. And I was making the jewelry for far longer than I started the company, because it was very scary, the idea of leaving my job. And I think it was scary for my husband. We had two children in school, you know, we're two incomes. And then I've told this story often, I'll tell it again. I had a business trip to France, which sounds very glamorous, but it wasn't, I promise. I was going to be there for 10 days. And on the first day upon arrival, and I was also very angry, I was missing sending my kids to camp. So I was filled with a kind of rage that of motherhood that any mothers listening to this will recognize. So I wasn't going to get to send my kids off to camp. I had to be in this business trip. And I arrived, and through a series of bizarre circumstances, I ended up, a coffee pot exploded on my arm, and I got second and third degree burns all over my arm. But I had to keep going. There was an event and da-da-da. So 3 days I was there, continuing with my job, going to the hospital every day to have the bandage changed twice a day, because they said I could only keep working if I went to have it done there. And I realized something clicked. And I said to my closest colleagues there, who are still dear friends of mine, I said, I'm leaving. I'm going home and I'm going to make jewelry. It was just like it all came together. I called my husband in tears. I said, I need to come home right now, right this minute. And I went to my boss and I said, I'm leaving. And I didn't tell him I was quitting. I said, I'm leaving. You're fine. There's a full staff of people here that can help you. It's not like I was leaving him high and dry. I had a staff. There was a staff. Like, there were people there that could do this. And on the plane ride home, I wrote a PowerPoint presentation to my husband about why I was going to do this, how successful it was going to be. It was going to be amazing. All the ways, all the bells and whistles. And I came home and, you know, he couldn't say no to me. I mean, I had an absolute bandage on my arm. I was in absolute, the kind of distress, mothers are going to recognize this, like I was completely at the end, right? So he said, yes, give it a try. You're working out of the house. You can't spend a penny. He's like, frankly, I don't know how you're going to do this, because you're just, but give it a shot. So that's literally how it happened. I quit my job. I started working. Of course, nothing happened the way I thought it would happen. I still saved all the emails that I would get back from stores that, you know, would say, no, what is this? They look like keychains. Why are you doing this? Do you have any experience in the jewelry world? Blah, blah, blah. But through a series of very fortunate events, one of which was Instagram, and that I had tweens, and that I was in a very ongoing disciplinary dialogue with my children about social media, that it was friction. And every mother and father listening to this will also know it. And it's probably more extreme now, but I was prohibiting it. I was the mother that was prohibiting it. And I was checking the phones at the door, and I had all kinds of silly rituals going on. And then one day it clicked to me watching it, because I watched them on social media. I was like, oh, maybe. So I asked them to show me how to use it, which they literally could have fallen off their chairs when I asked them to show me. And they showed me. And it was almost instantaneous that I was so worried about stores, the gatekeepers, liking what I did. I forgot that actual people were going to like what I did, because I liked it. And the people found it almost immediately. So we had customers before we had stores, and then we had stores, and it all just happened like that. And I also want to say something about creativity. One idea gives you 1,000 more ideas, and you just have to be open to them and open to failure. I always have, I mean, my production team could tell you, I have so many ideas going at any given time, and I do not believe all of them will succeed at any given time. And that is also a really good thing. And in the times when I couldn't afford to be doing jewelry, but was dreaming about jewelry, I was painting the walls of my house. I was knitting my brains out. I was cooking. I was cooking for neighbors when I couldn't, when I had enough, you know, I would cook for my neighbors. Like, it's like an itch, right? That's the way it is. When people ask me, like, oh, I want to leave my job and I hate my job and I want to leave my job. Well, I hated my job too. Sorry to any bosses that ever hired me, but you know this. You know, I hated it. you can't just leave your job. You can't just like, I want to do something creative. Like there really does have to be an idea. And you're like, oh God, I don't have the idea. The way to get the idea is by doing. And it's not, it can be the smallest thing. Like go take a class, go buy some clay and play with it at home. Go to YouTube. It is your friend. Go to Google. There's no barrier to entry to do anything. Maybe open heart surgery. Maybe that's the only barrier to entry, but there's very few barriers to entry to learn how to do pretty much anything you want to learn how to do, I think.
Yeah, it's funny, right? We started this with like, oh, I don't know how spiritual I am, but everything you said is deeply spiritual.
Not really.
Right? No, really, because if you listen to spiritual teachings and if you listen to how to gain a life of meaning or a life of recovery, right? It says exactly the same thing. It says action is key. Do one thing. One thing leads to another. You say, right? We talk about learning and learning one thing, one class, one other thing that leads to another idea. Then one good deed leads to another good deed. In Judaism, we say mitzvah gorer mitzvah. A good deed basically drags a good deed after it, right? And in that sense, the ability to also listen to yourself, right, is also a very deep spiritual moment. And when I talk about spirituality, and everybody who knows me knows, I talk about practical spirituality. I don't talk about spirituality on the cushion or the meditation. There's plenty of great teachers for that. The spirituality that we deal with is practical spirituality, the spirituality of everyday life that allows us, right, to create more meaning in our life. So in that sense, the moment to listen to oneself that says, I can't do this anymore. I want to do this. I need to listen to me. I'm not happy here, right? I need to move to do something that makes me more fulfilled.
It is.
Right? That is a deeply spiritual moment.
Yeah. And I guess I say I'm not spiritual. I'm not, you know, engaged in this. But it is, your life is comprised of the small moments, right? Of the little moments in your life. It's the tucking your shirt in. It's putting the dishes in the dishwasher moment. Like it really is. That is what your life is comprised of. I mean, very few of us have the life that those elements are not in it, right? You have to clean your house. You have to tuck your shirt in. No one's going to do those things for you. So what's it going to be? How are you going to do it?
Right.
How are you going to do those things in life?
That's right. And I would add to that, that sort of that when we get to those moments, right, the ability to conceive of it as a change, right? Because for a lot of people in recovery, for example, right, that moment looks different because that moment, what we talk about, let's say in AA, is my life has become unmanageable, right? I will not do this anymore. I could continue drinking. I could continue using drugs, right? But I do not want this anymore, right? I want something better for myself.
Yeah, and I think, but if you approach it like everything as such a big thing, I mean, I don't want to give advice to something so delicate, but I think it's like, I think it's every day, every hour, right? Every minute.
Right.
The same thing with people who are grieving. It's you have to be able to get through every minute.
And that's what we call one day at a time, right? I don't know what's happened tomorrow, but I can tell you what I'm going to do today.
Yeah, that's right. And life is filled with these up and down, ups and down kind of moments. And I also just also want to say that it's not about doing anything perfectly. Like, I think my superpower is I'm not a perfectionist. I mean, yes, the jewelry is really perfect and amazing, but I'm not afraid for things to go out in the world that are less than perfect. And I think that's probably pretty obvious in our social media accounts. You know, I don't look perfect. I grind against over photoshopping the jewelry like I see out in the world, because we are real people. I mean, you can photoshop your brains out, you can put makeup on, you can do all of these things, but at the end of the day, you are a person. We are all people. We are going to hold the jewelry in our hand, and it's not going to look like the one that's been hyper photoshopped. It's going to look like the jewelry in your hand. And that's what I hope to convey. And it's the same for you as a person.
And, right, as the jewelry grows with you, right, it changes, right? It'll get dinged, it'll get scratched, it'll have a different shine, a different patina, right? So, like, and those are the stories we we take along with us, right? Like that, yes. That's the beauty of it. And what, you know, one other thing I love about your jewelry, right, is that sort of you have to think about how to put it together. That is, yes, I can go to Cartier and just get a necklace, right? And you just put it on and it is what it is. With your work, right, you have to think, right? Do I want this? Do I want that? How does it go here? Do I attach this? Right? It's like there's yes, you can have a lock and use it as a locket or just as a pendant. Absolutely you can. But what you're trying to tell us through the jewelry, or at least what I'm getting, is like, no, I want you to think about this. I don't want you to just come into the shop and here's a made necklace, right? Even the rings, right? Like, here, I'm going to open them up for you because I want you to think about what to write inside.
Yes, and we deliver them to you open because the message is more important than the piece itself.
Right. And you, like, even if nobody sees it, but you know it's there.
You know it's there. That's exactly the point. Like, and I want people to use our jewelry not in a vacuum, not all wearing our jewelry. I want them to pick up the detritus, as I say, the detritus of their life that is in a box somewhere and bring it together with our locks. Like, this will help you take those pieces that you're saving in the bottom of your jewelry box and wear them. The most intriguing way people wear our jewelry is when it's like literally mixed with all the things that matter to them. It's not when they're wearing it, just our pieces.
Right.
That's as interesting.
Yeah. And the modularity of it, right? So that's the other thing that sort of that draws me to this sort of idea of the lock, the thing that combines the modularity of our life, right? The same piece of jewelry, much like the same book or the poems we read or the clothes we wear or whatever, right? That reflect changes in us as we get older and wiser or more or less traumatized, right? The ability to engage with your surrounding in a way that is more thoughtful. Because what you are doing, or right, if I wear the jewelry, I have to contend with that on a daily basis. I mean, unless you just wear it all the time, which some people I do, I'm sure. But like,
yeah,
right?
No, you have to contend with it. You have to take it on and off. But it's also like, I hate bringing up this analogy, but I love to rewatch movies that I loved when I was younger and see what I think of them now.
Right.
And I just did this recently and I was very struck by the movie All That Jazz,
yeah,
which I'd seen many, many years ago. And I remembered it as like, you know, I remembered the dance sequences and I remembered all these things. And I forgot about the commentary on death and the commentary on how Bob Fosse lived his life and what went on at the end and all of his regrets and his excesses and his joy and the great loves of his life. Like, seeing it with my 56-year-old self versus my 21-year-old self was just extraordinary.
Yeah.
It was an extraordinary experience. It meant so much more to me. I mean, I was sobbing at the end, which I don't even remember sobbing or even caring, but the Jessica Lange character is gone. And it's a crazy movie.
Right. And of course, vice versa, right? There's been movies that I'm like, oh, I'm going to see this. And I watched it and was like, oh, I wish I didn't re-watch it. Right? It was said, like, movies is like loomed large in my head, right? I'm like, it doesn't hold up very well.
It doesn't hold up very well anymore. Exactly. But that one really did. I mean, it was very moving to see that movie as a grown-up.
Right. So tell me, right, again, from following you and knowing, I know that sort of, right, and you said it as well, the sort of, at least in the beginning, but I'm sure still now, there's people who are like, you know, what's this Narishkeit? Like, why can't you make jewelry that's like others, right? Like, you get rejected, right? Criticized, right? I remember you
said, God.
Right?
Rejected, criticized, ignored. It's not real jewelry. Of course. I mean, we hear, yes, absolutely. And every day it's putting yourself on the line. And every day it's about being racked with self-doubt. I mean, again, I think maybe my self-doubt is my superpower. You know, we've never made it. We haven't made it. We're in the struggle. You know, I think that's how I always am going to see it. I'm never going to see it as like a vantage point of, well, here we are and it's all great. I mean, I view it as a daily, yeah. And how do I reckon with it? How do I reckon with self-doubt? I'll be honest, like, not incredibly well. I mean, I have a lot of it. I mean, I just, kind of deal with it. I know it now. Maybe I know self-doubt now. And I still plow forward. Even if I think things are bad that I'm working on, like not great, I have to plow through and I have to see it to fruition. And then I don't even throw it away, by the way. If I make something and I think it's bad, I don't throw it away. I keep it and I may revisit it and I may have a thought about what could fix it. So I'm in a constant state of iteration. I would say constant state of iterating everything. Nothing is permanent and everything can be improved upon in our work as my own self.
You almost sound like a guru, Marla, there. Careful, careful. Right? Like it almost sounds like spiritual talk.
No, it's not spiritual. It's literally just because I know I can always do it better. I'm sure I can do it better. Just if I had this one shot, you know, I was working out this morning with the trainer and I was like, if I just had this one shot, I just feel like I could do it better if I could do it longer or do it more. And she can't even listen to me. She's like, I'm really going to fire you. Like, you're almost fired.
What do you, you know, for a lot of people who listen to us, there are moments where like, I can't, right? I've been told no and no and no, and I don't know if this is even good, and I hate this, and it looks ugly, and it's not perfect, blah, 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 and all these things. What do you tell yourself or your staff, or like, right? How, what kind of language or anything do you say to yourself when you say, no, I need to do this because this is what I believe in, or I think that sort of somebody will like it, or you know, like, yeah, this is something I believe in.
Well, I want to be clear, like, I listen to my staff a lot. So if they really don't like something, I would have to be paying attention to them. But there are mixed reviews. I mean, there are currently mixed reviews right now going with some pieces that are we haven't put out in the universe yet, but that are planning to go out in the universe. And there's some very divergent opinions. And so I'm going to speak to each person about their opinions about these things and understand. And when I say every person, I mean, not just in production, I mean, customer experience, wholesale, shipping, fulfillment, marketing,
right?
Who works here? What are the issues with these specific things that I'm feeling very gung-ho about? So it can go both ways, right? And they might burst my bubble and I might then see it.
Right.
But that happens every day. I'll think I've just stumbled upon the greatest idea and someone will like, oh, bring me right down to earth like idiot. Okay, let's move on. Right? You really have to be open to it all.
And what do you see yourself in moments of real doubt or moments of like, can this really work? Can this really be something? Like, how do you motivate yourself for the next moment or the next day or the next idea?
I set the bad idea aside for a minute. And I try and stay with the good idea. And I also try, I'm not going to say, and then I'm like, okay, am I tired? Am I hungry? Do I need to go for a walk?
Right.
Am I tired? Am I hungry? Do I need to go for a walk? And my husband actually taught me that because he says that I come home like sometimes in a horrific mood, like very in a bad mood, but I've had a good day. And he's like,
I know that feeling on both sides.
He's like, somebody's tired, like a baby.
Right.
Like somebody's tired, somebody's hungry, and somebody maybe should go get on a bike or do something. Like one of those three things should probably happen before you utter another word.
Right. That's good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why a lock?
Why?
Yeah. Why a lock? How did, like...
So I love hardware. I love it. I always have. I mean, I always would have these little bits and bobs, even when I had nothing to do with. I love hardware stores. I love fish and tackle stores. I love boating stores, and I'm not a boater. I love horsey stores. I'm not a horsey person. I loved taking one of my sons to the lacrosse store, like all the accoutrements.
Right.
I love all the accoutrements of all these things. Farming equipment. I can't explain it. I see a lot of
paraphernalia. You like paraphernalia.
I love paraphernalia. I love all kinds of paraphernalia, seeing all of it. Yeah, the pieces of that make things. I love all of that stuff. I always have. I don't know why. It's just the way I'm wired, I guess. I just love it. I don't. That's it. And I saw the natural connection between the lock and the chain. And because of that, and because of the kindness of strangers and the people on 47th Street, which is, if you're listening to this and you're not from New York, this is the center of the jewelry world. We are in the center of it, and we work here very proudly. And the more I learned, it was like an itch. So the more eclectic, sophisticated, difficult types of mechanisms I wanted to work on. And we're working on some really crazy things. Are they all going to come to fruition? Probably not. But have we gotten some US patents? Yeah, we have.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But I couldn't tell you why. I like that stuff.
Got it.
And I find beauty in the functional object. So I think things that work are pretty great.
Right. You are sort of, right, you sell jewelry, you sell beautiful things. But it looks like, right, definitely from social media in general, that you have created a kind of para community, right? So that sort of whether it is your staff, right, or, right, that sort of that sort of work around you or create content around you, or sort of like people who like both sort of buy, wear, and sort of like talk about your jewelry, right? And the stores around the world that sort of host you in different weird and kind of ways, right? It's like my favorite, for people who don't know, there was almost like a jewelry, like a gumball dispensing machine in Bergdorf Goodman, which I loved.
That's our, we have it here.
Yeah, right. So, which was pretty amazing.
The vending machine,
exactly. Right.
Well, the gumball machine and the vending
machine. Oh, that's right. The vending machine, right, and Rockefeller, right? So like, yeah. But so you, I guess, intentionally or unintentionally building a community, or have built a community of people.
Yes. I mean, I think so. I mean, Addie's like showing me a picture of the napkins in our showroom. I don't know if we have one, but we don't. But so the napkins in our offices say jewelry's only job is to bring joy to people. And that's really my belief. Like, and I want my team to remember that there are customers who get angry. There are vendors who are difficult. There's all kinds of scenarios. But the only job that we have is to make jewelry that brings joy to people. So anything outside of that is really not there. Nobody's concerned. Like, that's really our end game. And then in the bathroom, we have towels that you wash your hands with that say, it's just jewelry. So they remember that too, that at the end of the day, we are not performing brain surgery. It is just jewelry. And please do not go home with this. Please go home with your day.
It's funny because one of my favorite pieces of wisdom in Judaism is by this rabbi called Rabbi Bonin Vapshischa. And he says a person should have two notes in his pocket. In one pocket, there should be a note that says, I am the center of the universe. The world was created for me, right? I am, right, God's best creation, right? Me, me, me. And the other note in the other pocket should say, I'm nothing but dust and ashes. And a person should have one note in each pocket. And when you feel too lowly, you should take out the note that says, I am, right, I am the center of the universe, or the world was created for me. And when you're feeling too haughty, right, to take out the other note that says, right, so like, I'm just dust and ashes and I'll die like everybody else. And I feel like, but you just, right, so like, on one hand, right, this is joy, right, we're giving people. On the other hand, it's also just jewelry, right? So like, there's always this sort of tension between those two things.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. In the middle of that is what we do all day. And then when we go home at night, hopefully we're not doing that.
And I think that's sort of like, that's important because part of what you're also doing, right, so like it gets a little serious, right, is that you make jewelry that helps sustain, right, the chair, right, like for, right, hold the seat, right, which you made, the beautiful folding chair, but also the campaign that you have for mothers.
Single moms, which
Single
we're doing
moms,
right,
right
now. Yes.
Right?
And we do more with that, which I would love to share with you.
Please, yes.
So we're not very... We don't talk about this part that much because we're a national, you know, it's a national effort for Lock Your Mom. I'm based in New York. And last year, I've always struggled. We give locks away to single moms, and they're sterling silver heart locks with an exclamation point or the of motherhood. And I'm going to act like I'm a makeup blogger, and I'm going to show it right now.
Oh, great.
So here it is.
It looks beautiful.
So The first year, 8 years ago, we gave away 50. And then I doubled every year until we got to 1,500. And now we give away 1,500 every year. So they're sterling silver heart locks. They're made here in New York by one of our workshops. And in addition to that, last year we started that I host a luncheon for homeless single moms at Henry Street Settlement, which is a very important social services agency here in New York City that's over 100 years old. And so we do a luncheon and we create a flower market because I wanted these single moms to feel like, I don't know, you don't have subways in LA, but oh, you're in New York.
Right? I'm in New York. I used to live in LA, but I'm in New York. Yes.
Right. So you know how the girl on the subway that is, her arms are laden with flowers because she's just been given flowers by her boyfriend or something. I wanted these single moms to feel that way. So we create a flower market and it's pretty amazing. It's on May 6th. And we're going to have, the lunch for the single moms, a flower market this year. They're going to get makeup. They're going to get handbags. So I'm really excited about that. It's doing a little bit more with this project. But yes, giving jewelry away is even more fun than selling jewelry. I have to tell you, in a perfect world, that's what I would do. Just give it away.
Oh, amazing.
I think my accountant, if he heard this, would not be happy. Addie just mouthed the words.
She's like, no. But, you know, it's funny because one of the things that sort of that is fascinating as I'm talking to you and thinking about the Instagram stuff as well is there's a contrarian in you, right? There is that person in you that's like, oh, everybody's going this way. I want to go that way. Oh, I can't talk about this on Instagram. Oh, look, I'm going to show you what I'm doing, right? Tell me a little bit more about that part of you.
I don't know. I'm my father's daughter, for sure. As annoying as he is, I am absolutely his daughter. So I guess, I don't know. I don't want to do it like everyone else. I really don't. I think the old way is a tired trope. I think there's just a lot of tired tropes in how we sell beautiful things and how we sell beautiful objects to people. It's very gender-based. It's very classist. It's very snobby. And I don't like any of those things. And I love beautiful things, but I hate anything that smells of elitism or snobbiness or anything like that. That doesn't interest me in the least. And that part of jewelry doesn't interest me in the least.
Right. So when you talk to young women, when you talk to single mothers, when you talk to your children, right, because the... not unlike myself, the path of the contrarian is difficult, right?
Yeah.
What's the best advice you give to people when, right, when you think about both the wisdom that you've gained, but also sort of like the putting yourself in a space where like, I don't want to be like everybody else. I don't want the old trope.
I think you smile at people when they tell you what you should be doing, and then you just kind of do your own thing. You just kind of do it your own way. I mean, I feel like I want to listen for the important things. Like, I want to know when people think I'm doing it the wrong way or not conforming to the standards that are needed. But I don't necessarily know if I'm going to do what they tell me to do.
Yeah.
And I also tell my children the same thing. Absolutely. Do not conform. Do not do what your classmates are doing. Do not be bothered by other people's view of how you should proceed in your lives. It's irrelevant and utterly unimportant. I tell them it's unimportant what I think.
What did they say back?
That's bullshit. Because I'm a Jewish mother. But it is unimportant. But it really is. Whatever, I may think something, but it is unimportant. They have to live their lives. They have to walk through this life.
How do you find inspiration?
Everywhere. I feel so lucky to feel inspired, even if it's in the wrong direction sometimes. But I just feel lucky that I do feel very inspired. There's a lot of ways and a lot of things that are inspiring. I feel lucky to have a team that is amazing and has ideas too, and that I'm able to pursue them. That is just it's luck. I mean, I am just saying it's luck, but it is luck. It really is. And I spent 20, 2 years doing jobs that I hated and wasn't very good at. Although one of my bosses bought one of our engagement rings for his wife, and he told me that part, I had that in my bio, and he said that part wasn't true. But it is true, I'm telling you. I was not great. I'm sure they have much better people doing my previous jobs. And I've been fired and all of those things.
Right.
And I also just want to say, and I've had money and then I've had no money. I've lived both ways, like in both instances.
Right.
And you can be happy both ways.
Of course.
Very happy.
So luck and locks, right?
Yeah.
Final thoughts?
I mean, I think you can't underestimate the power of like rejiggering, I guess. And I'm trying to think of something that's useful.
Right.
To people who are struggling. And I think when you're in a bad spot, which I have been in my life, it feels unending. The bad spot feels like absolutely unending.
Right.
And I think you have to shift. You have to shift your perspective, and you do have to do something different. You know what they say, if you keep the definition of insanity is you do the same thing over and over. You really have to change things up. And you have to eat healthy. It's really important.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forget it's sort of you, right? Although I haven't seen the vegetable show in quite some time. I mean, I know it was winter, but like, when is the vegetable show coming back?
The vegetable show is coming back with a vengeance. I promise. I've not abandoned it. It's just, I moved. I have a big surprise for the vegetable show. I have a new set for the vegetable show that's exciting. And yeah, the vegetable show is the silliest thing ever, but I think I'm going to do more of it because I love vegetables a lot.
Right.
I also really believe in eating healthy, and that it's very important. It does affect how you feel, and that those things are really important. So,
yeah. For those people who don't know, but like, right, if you follow Marla on Instagram, there used to be a lot, but now there's coming more, like when she goes to the market and gets vegetables and shows what she's doing. And it's somebody who also cooks and loves vegetables. But it's funny because I also like, and I'm sure like you do too, like vegetables, sometimes how they look. I don't always know, or you actually even want to cook them in that way. But the way they look in that sense actually makes me smile. Like if you put them in a bowl or whatever, they're the jewels of nature, if you will, right? Sort of like.
They are the jewels of nature, fruits and vegetables. It's very important. And learning how to cook them. I'm so surprised how many people don't take the time to learn to cook. But I just spent a week in a hotel in LA. I can't tell you how I didn't cook for a week. And I was like bereft.
Yeah, it's a great spiritual practice, in fact.
Yes. And you don't need a fancy anything.
No, you don't.
You don't even need fancy food.
The best meals I've ever had were in like kitchens that are smaller than a vestibule in Paris.
Yes.
When they made amazing food. So,
yes. I had a crappy stove that we were waiting to replace for 10 years. And when it was finally replaced, I said to my husband, I miss my other stove.
Exactly.
The stove back. And I love like the challenge of like, okay, 10 minutes. What, like right. Last night I came home exhausted. I was like, 10 minutes. What's in my fridge? Let me throw it together. See if I can do it. So I like the challenge of that.
So, right. Marla Aaron, you like the challenge, right? And doing things your own way. I know that you'll bucket this because that's who you are. But this is a very deep spiritual conversation, even though we're talking about things that are not seemingly that deep and spiritual. But I thank you so much for coming on. And I encourage everybody, Marla Aaron and her jewelry and the Instagram and the brand, the personality that is Marla Aaron. It's really quite remarkable. I'm a big fan.
Rabbi, I loved doing this with you. And I can't wait to meet you in person. And maybe I'll cook dinner for you. How about that?
You know what? Done deal. It's an emphatic yes.
This podcast was recorded by Tshuva Center. Thank you again all for listening. You can check out our Instagram and our website at Tshuva Center, TshuvaHCenter, CENTER, or tshuvacenter.org. We're on all the social media platforms.